Hello and welcome to this Master Investor podcast, roughly relating to what's been going on in the first quarter of 2024. I'm delighted to be joined again by an author and broadcaster who's good at bridge. It's our very own Jonathan Davis. So Jonathan, we are approaching the end of the first quarter. I'm talking to you as we approach Easter weekend, and I'm just really wondering what the economic indicators are telling us. Are we in a technical recession? But are we not really in the economic doldrums? You know, inflation is tamed. Is an interest rate on the horizon? So what do you think the indicators are telling us, and what is your network relaying to you?
Well, I think the first quarter has been quite encouraging, actually. It's been better than many people expected or indeed anticipated. And in the UK, well, we probably did have a minor recession, very mild recession the last second half of last year. But bear in mind, the figures always get adjusted later. So it might well be that we didn't, but we might. And the current data on the inflation and interest rates is pretty encouraging in the sense that inflation is coming down, still not down to target, but coming down. And, central banks, both in the US and the UK, are talking about interest rate cuts, actually positively talking about the possibility of interest rate cuts, having tried to, deflect people from thinking about those so far. So actually a little bit of spring in the air. The stock market is doing well, which is, again, surprised some. And so for the moment, touch wood, but there's still some big issues out there, of course.
So before we talk about the big issues that are out there, remind us about who the beneficiaries of an interest rate cut are. Obviously, those wanting to buy a house, those who are indebted, because, of course, the news headlines are very cost of living crisis heavy.
Well, the cost of living crisis, I think it's very clear now, was a combination of inflation being allowed to run out of control and the impact of Ukraine. And we've seen that change with the war in Ukraine goes on, but it's commodity prices and all those things have come down. So that's easing pressure on people. So in any case, so there is that sort of positive benefit to most people, consumers, that is, from what's happened. And, inflation really is the worst enemy of all. So that's all encouraging, I think. People with debt, obviously, they will be encouraged by the fact that interest rates may come down. But it's not clear cut that they will come down, I should say. But people are talking about the possibility. Mortgage rates, have eased a little, and that's good. And companies that have, stretched balance sheets are also doing quite well. So that's good for the stock market. So, yeah, on the whole, lower interest rates are good for most people, and not least the government as well, which is, got an awful lot of debt out there, which it has to service and replace. And so they'll be hoping for lower interest rates as well, given the constraints on the public finances. So, yeah, for the moment, lower interest rates are pretty much good all round at the moment.
So in terms of the investment landscape, now you and I have had pretty deep immersion in the Master Investor Show for a third consecutive year now. Now, I thought that this year's, the 2024 Master Investor Show, was interesting, more engagement from the audience, a bigger audience, and the emergence of sort of fund managers with demigod-like status. It's a long time since we've seen fund managers being feted like rock stars and celebrities.
Yeah, well, there's a bit of that, I think. Yeah, I think personally, I'm rather against all that. I think it's, the evidence is clear. Over the long run, there are some very, very good investors, but you should never get carried away and turn them into rock stars, frankly. I think, we had a good showing from fund managers at the Master Investor Show. There was a bigger turnout, as you say, and this kind of evidence, a bit of spring in the step. People can see, that things aren't going to get worse anyway. And I think you may be thinking about Stephen Yu, who runs something called the Blue Whale Growth Fund, which is an open-ended fund, which is backed by Peter Hargreaves, the founder of Hargreaves Lansdown, who looked around when he's made a huge, huge amount of money, several hundred million out of his creating Hargreaves Lansdown from scratch. And when he retired or sort of pulled back and took some of his money out, he looked around for something he could invest in that he really was doing what he wanted. And he encouraged Stephen Yu to start this firm. Blue Whale, and the fund has done very well. It's been taking a very aggressive position in tech stocks, and that's proved to be the right thing. It's quite volatile. They had a tough period last year before this kind of latest revival, but they've still got a very good long track record. So far, they've only been going, I think, 7 or 8 years, but it's put together a decent performance. Annualized return around 14%, I think, over the last 5 years. Total return. They don't pay a dividend much. So yeah, they've been riding the wave, shall we say, and I think the point here is that you know, Peter Hargreaves backs this. It's something to do with his own money, and because he has, shall we say, a lot of it, he can afford to be quite risky with his investments, and so he likes to back growth companies which could become very big, and we have seen this remarkable performance in the last 15 months. You know, Nvidia, the whole excitement about AI and so on has done the big tech, or the Magnificent Seven, if you want to call them that, done them very well. So he's done well out of that. Some of the other speakers at the conference have also done well out of that. Mentioned in particular a very popular trust, JP Morgan Global Growth and Income, which is a global trust. They don't get treated like rock stars, but they have done extraordinarily well. Again, had a significant exposure to these big tech companies. And they've performed exceptionally well. So, but they're a team managed investment trust. But yeah, generally speaking, though, I think one should be wary of star fund managers. The idea that people treat them as stars, because it does tend to suggest that we're in a kind of risk on phase, which may well turn into something, you know, rather bubbly.
Yeah, and it's too much pressure on an individual's shoulders as well. And some people were confused as to how you would describe Stephen Yu's particular investment offering, because of course he was demonstrating and presenting in the auditorium at the Master Investor Show, which was investment trust heavy, but he's not quite an investment trust. He's not an investment trust at all, is he?
No, he runs open-ended fund, what we call open-ended fund. Which can be contrasted to investment trusts, who are examples of a closed-ended fund. And the difference between the two really is that open-ended funds like Stephen Yu's is effectively, you can take the money in or take it out at any given point, and you'll get the price that is available, the latest valuation, or at least the day before anyway. So it's a very flexible way of investing. Investment trusts are different because they have sort of permanent or semi-permanent capital. So you can take your money out by selling your shares, but you won't necessarily get the net asset value. But there are pros and cons on both sides of this kind of vehicle. And open-ended funds can do very well, and investment trusts, some of us think, will do slightly better over time. But anyway, that's one for discussion at some point.
What I also heard at the Master Investor Show was there was a speaker called Ilias Khan, and he's involved with Quantinium, which is involved with accelerating quantum computing. So he gave a talk, and he said, we will be the biggest company in the world, which I thought was really, really punchy. At the moment, it's a private company, but in January, it had a $300 million US dollar equity fundraise. The company now has a valuation of about $5 billion US dollars. And I asked, you know, so are you going to list? And there was a suggestion that perhaps they would, but he didn't say whether it would be in the UK or the US. But it was an absolutely extraordinary presentation. And it's sort of linked in with Jim Mellon's speech. So Jim Mellon is a great advocate of Ilias Khan's. They talk to each other in person at great length. But Jim Mellon was saying, you know, UK equities are cheap. There's loads of value. You're going to see loads of mergers and acquisitions. And sure enough, we have seen lots of corporate activity so far this first quarter. And I'm sure it will bleed into quarter two as well.
I think you're probably right. I mean, the sense we've been saying for a long time that the UK equity market looks cheap. On terms of valuations, it's very much cheaper on average than other markets, most other markets anyway. But people have been saying that for a long time. They've been casting around for excuses or reasons. You know, Brexit was one of the reasons. But also, I think The government has taken notice finally of the fact that maybe it should be doing something about helping to, if you like, put a bit of zip behind the UK equity market, because it is important, very important. And it's got ironic, of course, that after 14 years of a Tory government, which you'd think would be mainly sympathetic to the equity market, they haven't really done anything until now. There are lots of things they could do, but they're strapped for cash. A good way to start would be to scrap stamp duty on share purchases, which is a long-running beef that we all have, because no other country in the world does it to the same extent, I think, with one possible exception. And that is just a disincentive to invest in UK equity companies. And then there's basically a lot of need for people to reform the way the pension funds invest. The government has been talking about forcing them to put more money into the UK equity market. But they're saying, well, of course, we don't want to do that because the UK equity market isn't performing very well. So it's a bit of a kind of doom loop here. So we've got to do something. But M&A is a sign that the market is cheap, and I think we will see more of it as confidence about interest rates comes back. In particular, we will see M&A and activity, and that this time, if it's generally the case that we are through the latest crisis, if that's the case, then I think we'll see the UK equity market do well. Therefore, we'll get not only M&A, but we'll also get, good companies being re-rated. I think that is definitely a real possibility as we look through into the rest of this year. And that's a, well, you could say about bloody time, frankly, but it has been a long time that the UK equity market has been very, very dull and performing not very well. And yet we have lots of good companies, particularly, smaller companies, which are, have potential to become great companies. But these days, they're not choosing to list. If you are a successful company, you're not choosing to list on the UK, you're choosing to go to the US, where the valuations are much higher. And I would be, this company you were talking about, the quantum computing one, which frankly, I did hear part of that presentation. And, what they're doing is kind of way beyond my knowledge of what they're actually talking about. And what they're doing is quite deep maths and involved. But, who's to argue with that? That is looks like becoming, well, has become an example of a unicorn. A private company that has got a valuation of more than $1 billion. And it'd be very important to see where that goes, assuming its success continues. I hope it would list in the UK, but I have to say at the moment, I rather suspect it wouldn't.
So you mentioned the government and how it's not doing particularly well to incentivize the investment landscape. But in the most recent budget, we had the Chancellor of the Exchequer talking about ISAs. It always surprises me when a Chancellor of Exchequer can talk about ISAs and sound as though he knows what he's on about. So we are approaching the ISA deadline. And although you're always telling us that, really the best ISA picks are probably in summer, now is the time, if we haven't, to do a bit of ISA reshuffling before the start of the next financial year.
Definitely so. I mean, of course, the important thing is to make sure that you use up your allowance if you've got the cash available to do so. And you can keep it in cash for a little while. You don't have to invest it straight away, basically. So you don't have to make an investment decision immediately. You could just make sure you get that cash into the ISA, and then you can decide what to do with it later on in the year. And as you say, typically, putting your money to work in the middle 6 months of the year is better than doing it in the other 6 months of the year. That's just a historical phenomenon. A lot to do, in fact, with the ISA season. I think that a lot of people put their money in at the last minute, and people can see them coming. It also drives up prices a little bit, compared to other times of the year. But yes, so yeah, ISAs, and of course, there's some quite good offers on now from, you don't have necessarily to put it into an equity ISA. You can put it into or a stocks and shares ISA, whatever you like to call it. You can put it into a cash ISA, get some quite good rates on that, at least at the moment. You're not quite sure how long that will last. But if you look to the platforms, they've all got pretty much more attractive options on cash ISAs at the moment. And of course, the Chancellor's talking about creating a British ISA, an extra 5,000 a year on top of the 20,000 that you can put in each year, and avoid tax on the proceeds. He's talking about that, but of course that won't really happen until the election, and it's probably not going to have a huge effect anyway. So many difficult issues. What would constitute a British company? Is it a listed British company, or is it a company which has most of its activities in the UK? What is it going to be? But in the meantime, yeah, ISAs got to get it done. It is a fantastic savings vehicle, and it's one that has great bipartisan support, so I don't think we'll see that taken away in any way. So get on with it.
So, in terms of the general election in May, there are some local elections, and the police and crime commissioners' elections are being held the first Thursday of May. I'm just wondering if this will be seen as a proxy for any general election and will give the Conservative government an indication as to how much work they've got to do in terms of lobbying the British public before they call a general election, which I believe they must do by the end of the year.
They pretty much must do it by the end of the year, exactly. And I think the end of the year is when we'll get the election. I don't think that people always talk about going early in these things, but you only do that if you're really ahead in the polls and confident of winning. The local elections, well, I mean, you can guarantee that the Tories will get a bloody nose in the local elections. They aren't particularly represent they're representative of the general sentiment, but they're not a kind of direct read through to the results of general election, though there will be many pundits who will try and convince you otherwise. I mean, the Tories are going to lose lots of seats. It will be interesting to see how the other parties do, of course. And in particular, it's there's a lot of regional variations in local elections, and you can there'll be a lot of rune reading around that. But I don't think the outcome is in doubt. I don't think that the message either coming out of it will be in doubt, which is that the Tories have got a real uphill struggle if they're going to try and win the election. I think they're no one believes they're capable of that. It's more a question of damage limitation, I think, after 14 years, admittedly 5 of them in the coalition. But it's going to be an uphill struggle, shall we say, for them.
So finally, we're embarking on the second quarter of the year. In terms of themes, investment themes, highlights, that's something to look forward to.
Well, I'm not sure the second quarter will be particularly good. I mean, we have had a very good first quarter, say, for example, if you look at the US market, so far the US market has performed. It's already got to the level which the majority of pundits were saying it would get to at the end of the year. So it's already got there. And we have, there's signs, a little few signs of valuation frothiness in the US. Nobody knows for sure quite what's happening to the US economy. No one knows for sure, quite how long this kind of run by the big tech companies is going to last. But the data looking reasonably good. So yeah, there is a risk that we could have a sort of melt up, what we like to call a melt up. In other words, the market keeps on rising until it gets to a really silly level, and then there'll be a big correction. But I'm not sure that the second quarter is really going to look too good. But the bigger question is, what are your kind of strategic ideas? Where can you look for, longer term returns? As you know, my main area, especially, is in investment trusts, and I think there are some good opportunities there. Discounts are still pretty wide, and if you pick them carefully, I think you're going to do quite well out of some of the alternatives. Some of the renewables, I think, will come back. Things like that. But the harder decision is about, in your equity disposal, should you put extra money into the UK equity market? Well, I think I would be inclined to do that. I think that does look for the reasons we've mentioned already. US market looks pretty formidably valued, and so but it has got strong momentum behind it, so it could easily carry on a little bit further. But I still like Japan. I think Japan is looks very attractive from a investment point of view, so I'd certainly be having a look there. Well, there's actually quite a few opportunities out there. But the important thing, I think, is to just to bear in mind that there is this big, one big issue, well, two big issues hanging over the markets. One of which is geopolitical risk. We've, talked a lot about that. What's going to happen in Ukraine? What's happening with China? The Middle East is obviously an issue, and so on. And companies are withdrawing or pulling operations back to their own shores because of disruption to shipping and so on. So there's geopolitical risk out there, and there's also this looming risk for many developed countries of the massive amount of debt that the governments have accumulated. They've got no room to spare. That's why tax levels in the UK are the highest they've been for many years. and the US government's got this huge amount of debt to refinance, and that's going to be the issue that plays out. So the stronger the economy is, the more likely it is that interest rates are going to actually stay where they are rather than come down. So people who are banking on interest rates coming down, I think might have to sort of pause and think about that. And it so far it hasn't happened. You know, people were expecting it to come to the interest rates to come down already, but it hasn't happened so far. So I think you need to keep an eye on that. Definitely to keep an eye on that. And you know, that also means therefore that you could still get kind of quite good numbers on your cash and in the bond market. So plenty of opportunities, I think. But I think a slight word of caution.
Okay, you mentioned renewables possibly coming back or doing better. So let's end on a recommendation in terms of the renewals that you gave a nod to there.
Okay, well, it's very interesting. I mean, they haven't done so well the first quarter, but there are a number of trusts which have been going now for over 10 years now, got good track records, even despite the fact they've all moved to big discounts in the last couple of years. They've still met their original targets. I mean, they're target was to produce analyzed returns of around 8 to 10% per annum, so mainly income, but with a little bit of extra on top, bit of capital return on top, and they've managed to, the best ones have managed to do that despite having a big sell-off in the last couple of years, and you can get very good yields, and you get 7-8% now on things like Greencoat UK Wind and Bluefield Solar Income Fund. These have been going for more than 10 years. They are the kind of the if you like the maturer instruments, and I think you'll do well. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if you buy them and own them, you're going to get something like 9 or 10% compound return over a period of years, and you're doing something for the country, you're doing something for climate change, and I think, you know, government will be sympathetic to them because they need private capital to help meet whatever climate change targets they've still got left. You know, reality has set in a bit about that, but you know, so I think they look to me, they look pretty attractive bets for the medium term anyway.
That's wonderful. Jonathan, it's been a pleasure. Have a happy Easter and I'll see you in the second quarter.
Thank you very much. Always a pleasure.
This podcast was brought to you by Master Investor. For more investment and economics analysis, please visit masterinvestor.co.uk.